Chapter 9. We were in the country of Balquhidder, and to knock at the door was a great risk, as no clan ruled the area. It was full of men and women that had been driven from their lands by the Campbells. Some of the people here were part of Alan's clans, but others were his enemies. I was in such a bad state that Alan was ready to risk everything to see me get some help. We were lucky, as the house belonged to McLaren's, who came from Appin. They were glad to welcome Alan because he was part of their clan, but also because they knew him by reputation. I was put to bed, and the McLarens went to fetch a doctor for me. It was a month before I was ready to travel again. All the time I was ill, I told Alan to go on without me, but he refused to. He didn't hide in the house while I was ill, but stayed in a hole in a small forest during the day and came to visit me at night when it was easy to see soldiers coming. The McLarens were very proud to have him as their guest, and no soldiers ever came to the house. I saw some dragoons ride through the valley below the house, but that was as close as they came to the house. Our wanted posters had reached the people of Balquhidder. It only took a few days for the whole country to know that Alan and I were there, but in the highlands and amongst these clansmen, a secret was kept for a century by everyone. Not one person there would turn us in for the reward, no matter how much it was. While we were at the McLaren's house, Robin Oag, one of Rob Roy's sons, came to visit me. "I hear your name is Balfour," he said to me. "It is. David Balfour," I said. He asked me if I was a relative of the Balfours of Braith, and when I didn't know, he left in a mood. He told McLaren that I was a crazy person, and just as he reached the door, Alan arrived. The two men looked at each other with great suspicion and held their hands. They were ready to draw their swords. They argued for a while. McLaren told the two to fight with his Highland pipes instead of swords. Though Robin easily won the contest of playing the pipes, the music helped the two men end any quarrel that they had, and it wasn't too long before Robin was on his way home. It was now August, and we were ready to go south. We were running low on money, and if we didn't make it to the office of Mr. Rankill as soon, or if he couldn't help me, then we were going to die of hunger. Alan thought that the soldiers that were looking for us had given up for the most part by now, which meant that we could cross the bridges of the Forth and Stirling without attracting too much attention. They'll be looking for us in Forth, as it is in Highland country, but they will not think that we would go to Stirling, Alan said. We went south towards Stirling that night, and soon we had left the Highlands for the Lowlands. After months of trials and adventure, I was back in my own country. When we reached the Stirling Bridge, I was ready to cross it without hesitation, but Alan was more cautious. He thought it seemed to be too quiet, and that it would be wise to watch the bridge for a while, for anything strange. An old woman came hobbling along, and before she could cross the bridge, a sentry appeared all of a sudden to question her. "We can't cross here," Alan said, and we moved away from the bridge through the fields. I was disappointed that we couldn't cross to Stirling. In my mind, I'd seen us already at the door of Mr. Rankiller, at where I claimed my inheritance of the House of Shores, and was no longer a hunted criminal. But now, I was on the wrong side of the river, with no way to cross it. Alan decided that the only way we were going to cross the river was in a boat, so he set about trying to borrow one. We walked through the night until we came to Limekilns, just across the water from Queensferry, the town Mr. Rankiller lived in, and I had been kidnapped from. We found the public inn at Limekilns, and Alan came up with a plan to get the barmaid to help us find a boat. He tricked her into feeling sorry for me. Alan told her a very sad story. It was about the long journey we had been on and how I had nearly died. He told the girl that we were very close to finding my friends, but to get to my friends, we needed a boat before our enemies caught us. When I told her that it was Mr. Rankiller that we were trying to reach, she promised to find a man and a boat to carry us to him. It was a day before the barmaid found us a boat. She hadn't trusted anyone enough to tell them what was happening, and had stolen her neighbour's boat to row us across to Queensferry. I didn't know what to say to thank her. Although it was hard for me to find the right words, it was harder for the barmaid to accept the compliments and thanks that we gave her. We got into the boat, and she rowed us across to Queensferry in silence. She set us ashore, shook her hands, and then was off. She rowed back to Limekilns again before we could even thank her for all she had done. Even after she had gone, We couldn't find anything to say that was enough to cover the kindness that she had shown to both of us. All Alan could do was stand upon the shore, shaking his head. She was a very fine woman, Alan kept saying. Even when we found a small den to sleep in, Alan kept repeating what a good woman she was. I felt guilty that we had tricked a girl, so good and simple, into helping us when she knew nothing of the danger she had put herself in by doing so. The next morning, we agreed that Alan would fend for himself for the day, while I went into Queensferry to talk to Mr. Rankiller. Alan taught me how to whistle a short Highland tune, so that I could use it to tell him when I was coming back. I walked into the town and was on the main street of Queensferry before the sun had risen. It was a town with buildings built from fine stone, and the roofs were covered with slate. It was not the grandest town that I had ever seen, but even so, it made me feel ashamed of the clothes I wore. As I stood in the town, I began to think about my position. I had nothing to stand upon when I spoke to Mr. Rankiller. I had no proof of my rights, no proof of my identity, and looked a little better than a beggar did. People began to come out of their homes. As they passed me on the streets, they nudged each other and whispered about me. It was then that I began to question whether a man like Mr. Rankiller would even agree to see me. My appearance wouldn't convince him of my story. I couldn't even muster the courage to ask one of the passers-by the way to Mr. Rankiller's house. I was certain that they would just laugh in my face. So I simply walked about the town like a dog that had lost its master. It got close to noon, and I became tired of wandering the town. I had just come upon a beautiful house, when I bumped into a gentleman coming out of it. The gentleman was so shocked to see a man dressed as poorly as I was that he asked me what I was doing there. I told him I was in Queensferry on business and looking for the home of Mr. Rankiller. "Why, this is his house, and I am Mr. Rankiller," he told me with a smile. "Then, please, sir, I need to talk to you," I begged him. "I don't know your name or your face," Mr. Rankiller replied. "My name is David Balfour," I said. "David Balfour," he repeated slowly, sounding surprised at the name. "And where have you come from, Mr. David Balfour?" he asked me. "A great many strange places, but I think it would be best if I tell you the story in private," I replied. "Yes, that would be the best thing to do," he said. Then he led me inside his house and sat me in a room at the back of it. The room was full of books and papers, and he asked me to sit in one of the chairs, even with my filthy clothes. "Now state your business and come quickly to the point. Nec gemino bellum trajanum auditor ab ovo." "Do you understand that?" Mr. Rankiller asked me with a keen look in his face. "I will even do as Horace says, sir, and carry you in media res," I replied. The doctor seemed pleased that I understood the Latin he had spoken and replied in kind. It had been a little test, because only a gentleman of education would be able to speak Latin. "I have reason to believe that I have some rights on the estate of Shaws," I told him. "Well, Mr. Balfour, you must continue. Where were you born?" "I was born in Essendean on the 12th of March in 1733. My father was Alexander Balfour, the schoolmaster there. My mother was Grace Pitterell. I believe she came from Angus," I told him. "Do you have any papers to prove you are who you say you are?" Mr. Rankiller asked me. "No, sir, but Mr. Campbell, the minister of Essendean, has them and can produce them if they are needed. Mr. Campbell would also be able to tell you my identity and my uncle. I don't think that he would deny me," I replied. "Your uncle is Mr. Ebenezer Balfour," he asked. "He is," I confirmed. "And you have seen him?" he asked. "He received me at the House of Shaws," I assured him. "And did you ever meet a man named Hoseason?" Mr. Rankiller asked. "Yes, I did. He was paid by my uncle to kidnap me from the town. He took me to the sea to sell me as a slave in the Carolinas. But we were shipwrecked, and I have suffered so many hardships to come back here to speak with you," I explained. "Were you shipwrecked?" Mr. Rankiller asked me. "On the island of Mull, but I was washed up on the island of Arade," I replied. "I see you know the Highlands better than I do. But so far, I will tell you your story is the same as that which I have already been given. Now, tell me, how were you kidnapped?" Mr. Rankiller said brightly. "I was on my way to meet with you after my uncle tried to kill me. I was taken onto Hoseason's ship and struck from behind. I was kept in the belly of the ship and didn't wake until I was far at sea. It is only by God's kindness that I escaped," I explained. "The brig was lost on June the 27th, and it is now August the 24th. Where have you been all this time?" It has already caused your friends a great deal of trouble, and I will not be happy until I have set this right," Mr. Rankiller said. "You may trust me. I was your uncle's man of business. But the day that the brig sank, Mr. Campbell came to see me demanding to know where you were. I had never heard that you existed, but I did know your father. But what I knew of the family of Balfour, I was afraid that you were dead. Ebenezer admitted that he had seen you and told me he had given you money to go to France to receive a full education. I knew this was a lie, for Ebenezer is a very stingy man. When Mr. Campbell asked why you hadn't written to him, your uncle lied again and said that you wanted nothing to do with your old life. Then Captain Hoseason appeared with the story of your drowning," Mr. Rankiller explained. "I felt that I could trust him, so I sat down and told him the story of my adventure, from the time I was shipwrecked until I had arrived at his house. He listened to every aspect of my story with his eyes closed, and at times I was worried that he had fallen asleep. But he had heard every word and could remember every detail of it, even the Gaelic names that I struggled with. When I gave him Alan's name, he stopped me and said, 'It might be better not to give me the names of all those men of the Highlands you met. They are somewhat ignorant of the law. Although I am somewhat hard of hearing at this moment in time, it might be best to call any such friend Mr. Thompson,' he told me kindly. It was clear that news of the death of Colin Campbell and that Alan was wanted for murder had reached the Lowlands. Throughout the rest of the story, I called Alan Mr. Thompson. James was called Mr. Thompson's relative. Colin Campbell was called Mr. Glenn, and Clooney was named Mr. Jameson, a Highland chief. When I finished my story, Mr. Rankiller opened his eyes and said, 'Well, well, that is a great tale, a great journey of yours. I wonder if there is not a country in Scotland that you haven't wandered through. You have had some bad luck with cheats and lairs, but you have behaved well enough and come through all of this. Your Mr. Thompson seems to me a gentleman of some good qualities, but he is not a man of Lowland law or society. I know that you were right to stand by him, as he was right to stand by you. Both of you were true companions and would die for the other at the hands of the Redcoats. Now you are near an end to your troubles,' Mr. Rankiller said with a smile. 'I spent the night at Mr. Rankiller's house. I slept in a bed and was able to bathe in hot water, ate a hot meal, and was even given new clothes. For now, I was safe and slept well, knowing that Alan was happy in his den as a man of the Highlands.'